Hello and welcome back to the My First Marathon podcast, where we interview runners in all stages of their running careers about their first marathon experiences to prove to you that anyone can run a marathon. My name is Taylor, and today's episode we speak to a runner who grew up playing sports and staying active, but it wasn't until his father-in-law began running marathons that Brandon started wondering why he was still on the sidelines. After years of saying one day, he finally signed up and trained for his first marathon with a local run group that would completely change his experience. His debut race came with all the classic first-timer hurdles, injury during taper, hitting the wall, and learning on the go, but he crossed the finish line and he didn't stop there. Brandon went on to run 4 marathons in a single year and launch a 12-hour livestream treadmill challenge to raise money for stroke research in honor of his grandmother. It's a story about finding confidence, building community, and turning a personal goal into something bigger. So let's get into it. Please welcome Brandon. Well, Brandon, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm really excited to break down your first marathon story. I know you've had quite a few running years under your belt, I guess, and quite a few experiences. So thanks for coming on. Excited to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. All right. Well, we like to start from the beginning. So how did you get introduced to movement, running? Where did this whole journey kind of start for you?
Yeah, well, I was always fairly active. Like as a kid, I played soccer, played sports. And then when I graduated, I kind of like got out of like, when I got graduated high school, went into college, I just focused on engineering and did like some intramural sports, stuff like that. But once I graduated from college, got into the workforce, I kind of lost like the physical activity. I mean, I was like still active. I was going to the gym, but I wasn't like challenging myself all that much.
Yeah.
And a few years into that, my father-in-law, he started running marathons. Like he had a certain diagnosis and needed to stay active. And so he just found a running community just to make sure that he stayed in good shape while he was working through that. And so we started going to these marathons, and I was sitting at the finish line watching all these people run by. I'm like, why am I not doing this? Like, I'm a young, healthy guy. Like, I like to push myself. Like, I was very, like, very motivated, like, in soccer and everything in high school. Why am I not doing this? And, but then after a few years of saying that, like, I kept saying I would sign up, but then I just wouldn't. And I didn't know why. And I was like, maybe it's a fear of mine that I'm not going to be able to finish it, or I wasn't really sure. And finally, after, I think it was during COVID, I was like, you know what, I need to make a change. I can't keep saying I'm gonna do it and not do it. And so finally I just went online, booked my spot on the first marathon, and then said, okay, I'm gonna figure it out afterwards.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how I got started, was just seeing a bunch of people finishing marathons, going and supporting him and being like, why am I on the sidelines? Why am I not one of these people running? You know, I'm seeing people in their 60s and 70s, and I'm like 25 at the time. I'm like, they can do it. Why can't I do it?
Right. No, that's cool. It sounds like you were looking for a goal and something just like happened in front of your sight and you're like, that's the goal, which
exactly.
Is cool. I love that. So yeah, I guess when you were thinking about the marathon, like I think the typical runner pipeline we see, couch to marathon or whatever it might be, you run a 5K, you run a 10K, you run a half marathon, and then you run the big race. But you were immediately focused on, let me train for this marathon. So what were you thinking about in terms of like training, or did you have any build up to that point? Like what did that all that look like?
I had run a couple of half marathons in the past with him before he had bumped up to marathon, but that was probably 4 or 5 years prior. I remember at the time, like when, you know, we actually would do it, like I'm up here in Maine right now, we would do the Shipyard Portland half marathon. And I remember thinking like, man, how am I going to run for, you know, 2 hours? Like, what am I going to think about? What am I going to do? And actually at that time I did all the training on my own. So this was, like I said, like probably 4 or 5 years before actually doing marathon. I was like kind of like a stubborn mid-20s, like I can figure this all out on my own. And so I figured out my half marathon training, and I was doing it on my own with no group. I wasn't stretching or doing any of the nutrition, and I was just using like my regular gym shoes. And like, go figure, I got injured. Like I started having like IT band problems because I wasn't stretching. And so then I just stopped training and then showed up for the half marathon and pushed through, finished, and it went well. But I was like, it happened twice where like I'd get halfway through training, and you know, the half marathon training is like half of a marathon training. So
yeah,
I was thinking like, if I can't even get through a half marathon training, how am I ever going to get through a marathon training? And so I had some experience, but I had those doubts in my mind of like,
yeah,
once I double this, like, can I even get myself through the first 2 months of training?
Right.
And that was the big thing for me, was like, I was also starting to get into business. Like, I started a side hustle in real estate. I was really starting to work on myself, like with my personal development. And, you know, like what got you here won't get you there kind of thing. Or also, yeah, like you're gonna have to do something different than what you were doing before. And so I ended up joining a running group. That was my father-in-law's suggestion. He's like, hey, just join the group. They run up, they do their long runs every Sunday. You're going to get training. You're going to get advice on nutrition and everything else. Like, just join the group. You'll have a community. And so that's what I ended. That was the difference. That was a change that I made, was I signed up. So I was stopped thinking about signing up. And then yeah, I joined the community. I mean, it was like $150 for the training. Yeah. And it was like a no-brainer, you know?
Sure. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Okay, I like that that you had the date on the calendar, and then you found the group. You were like, I'm going to do this one way or another. I love that. So when you started with the group, was that the turning point for you? Was that when you were starting to feel like, oh, okay, I can stick with this. I think I can, you know, put together a training plan for this marathon.
Yeah. So they actually put the training plan together as well. Nice. So I just like became, so like I said, like in my 20s, I was like, oh, I could figure this out. Like, I was an engineer. I figured out, I got through all this really tough schooling, and like, I'm a problem solver. I can do this. I can solve this on my own. But there's a lot to it, you know, whether it's the right, getting the right shoes or the right equipment or, fueling and, stretching and all of that. And so I just kind of went into it with a very open mind. And at this point, I was like, I have to do something a little different than what I've done before. And so I just listened to my coach. And she was always, she would always say I was like one of her best students, because I just did what she said. I didn't challenge. I was like, well, she's run a lot more marathons than I have, so I really should just listen. And so like, I made a bunch of changes there. Like, I got fitted for shoes. I got the right shoe. I even got different socks, like running socks.
Nice.
And
yeah.
And then got a water bottle, you know, a water bottle with like the electrolytes. And like, so I remember like the first time running with a handheld water bottle, I was like, what am I doing? This feels so weird.
Yeah.
But then to the point where now, like at least a couple of years ago, like when I've kind of pulled back a little bit from running, I kind of like did so much, you know, like I did, we'll talk about it later, but like a couple ultra marathons. And so I was training all year round. And so it was kind of a lot. So I pulled back a little bit to try to be a little bit more balanced with it. But to the point where, I would go for a 3 mile run where you really don't need to bring a handheld on a 3 mile
sure
run, but like it would feel weird without it. So I would bring it even on a 3 mile run. So it became a habit. And so, yeah, I just started to learn the fueling with the electrolytes and when to take carbs. And, you know, also there's just so much to learn about what your body actually likes and doesn't like too.
Totally.
And so you learn that in that whole journey. Like, with a half marathon, I didn't really have to worry too much about that. Maybe take one goo and it's okay.
Hope for the best.
Like,
yeah,
you know, you start talking about 4 or 5 hours, and then you really have to make sure like that your body responds well to what you're fueling it with.
Totally. Yeah. It's great that you had that resource too, your father-in-law, and then you had your coach that was helping you with a lot of these things. So that's really great that you had them. I guess when do you feel like, I feel like for most runners, there's a run or like a season in your marathon training where the pieces all click together. You feel the right way. You have the right shoes. You know, you have that run where you're like, okay, I can do this. And it's a big confidence booster. Did you have a run like that? Or did you have a season like that for your first marathon?
I probably actually felt like that No, you know, the cool thing about the first one was that like I had run a half marathon beforehand. So then all of a sudden thinking about there's this wall I'm about to hit, right? Like you do your 7 mile long run, then 8, then 9, then 10, then 11, and then 12. And then it jumps like to 14. I mean, every training program is different, but mine would like, once we got into the double digits, it would go then, you know, 12, 14, 12, 16, 12, 18. And so when that first time going to 14, I was like, I've never run over 13 before. And like you hit 13 and it was like, wow. Like it, like you build it up as this big thing in your mind of like, I've never done this before, but then like, it's just like, you know, another 10th or quarter mile beyond what you've done before. And, then I started getting like really excited because I was like, oh, I just did 14. And then 2 weeks from then I'm going to do 16, which is going to be my new. And so like, you're setting these setting a personal record for distance, like each step of the way. Yeah, I would say that was probably like one of the biggest things I remember, is just like hitting different milestones and like really starting to get encouraged about the distance that we're hitting. I can't remember if I think I ended up maxing at 18. And
okay,
then you have that big jump, you know, to go to 26.
Taper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I remember.
Cool. No, that I always say I'm so jealous of people training for their first marathons, and getting to talk to people about their first marathons makes me even more jealous, because it is. It's like that high you get every single weekend of hitting a new milestone weekend after weekend after weekend, and it keeps building to this head, and it's so exciting. So yeah, it's a really unique experience that I think is unique to training for your first marathon. So absolutely. I love that. So we progress through marathon training, we're getting closer to race day. I just mentioned the taper period. I feel like people either love taper or hate taper. Were you a fan? Did you like that things slowed down, or how'd you feel?
You know, what's funny is, and one of the things I was going to talk about, like if we had talked about like lessons or anything from training, I got into taper and I had no injuries all training. So like say the first 3 months, I think we did a 4 month program, no injuries. And then I think it was the first week of taper, I got to the last mile and I had like a shooting pain up my like right calf. And I was like,
oh no, yeah.
What the heck is that? Like I had to stop. Like normally you feel something you can push through and like, sure. You know, you shouldn't push through certain kinds of pains, but some are okay.
Yeah.
And this one was like, oh, I can't run. And like, I had to like stop and stretch and I had to really baby it and run. And like, I kind of like ran walk on the way in. And I was like, this could really prevent, like if this happens too early in the marathon, this could knock me out from marathon. So that kind of stressed me out. What I ended up doing, this is like the biggest lesson for me, is I used to just be like, this can't be fixed. This is just a me problem. Like I'm just kind of screwed. Instead, sure. I went to a sports medicine doctor and he was like, did his whole thing feeling around. He's like, I think there's maybe some like scar tissue here that like we can like that might have like, you know, these two muscles should be sliding past each other, but there might have been a little injury and now they've kind of fused together. And so they're like putting each other in tension. And so I did two sessions with him. He did some, you know, I listened to everything he said. He did like his work. Then I did some stretching, went back. He did his work again. Some like, I think it was like some red light therapy and like some dry needling, and like it went away. And it wasn't a problem. And I finished, I think I might've took like, I took it easy for 2 weeks and then went into the marathon, but you know, all the work was already done in the first three months. Yeah. So I ended up like pulling back. So my taper was like really tapered and the marathon went well. Like that did not happen as an issue at all. It went away. And that's happened actually to me, I think 3 times in my tapers.
Really? Which, oh, yeah, that's so
where,
interesting.
Where like something pops up towards the end and I'm like, are you kidding me? But then I go see my guy and he fixes me right up. And that's where like the old me would have just been like, I'm just unlucky. Like I just got to deal with it. Like, you know, and like, it just wasn't meant to be. And so that now I'm like, no, if you just go to the doctor, he could like figure it out if you go to the right person.
Totally. Yeah. And I think the right person is the key there. Like find somebody running specific. I just went through an injury. I've talked about it a lot on here, but just went through one and it took me a minute to find the right person. But once you find the right person, definitely go early, go often. As soon as you feel something, I think it's not worth it to, like you said, kind of sit and try to figure it out yourself for sure.
Yeah. I was going to say like being a part of the community, I've been running with people for 4 or 5 years now. And there's a few people in mind that have the same injury from like 4 years ago.
Yeah. And, yeah. It can really linger.
Like, some things can linger and I get it. But at the same time, I know like they're out there. Like the doctor said, don't run. And they're out there running 16 miles and they're pushing through. And like, I used to do that too. Like when I was younger, cause I was like, oh, I'm like invincible. Like I'm in my 20s. And then I just started just listening to the doctor. And then like 3 weeks later, it'd go away. And you know, something still pops up usually like in one training cycle, but I just know like, I'm going to go to my doctor. It's going to cost me like $50 for the visit. It's going to take an hour and I'm going to be fixed right up, at least for what I've been dealing with, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And for that, it's a no-brainer, right? Yeah. You might as well check it off the list for sure.
Right.
But it seems like, I mean, that close for, especially for your first marathon, I know it's happened a couple of times you said, but for your first marathon, I can imagine that would hurt your confidence. Did you feel like you took a hit to your confidence that close to race day?
I would say I was confident I could finish if it didn't pop up as an injury.
Yeah.
But I was wondering is this going to happen? Because it made me have to run differently. And then that's another issue too, is like, or at least when I felt like it might become like the issue might be starting to present itself, like you start changing your foot strike. Like I started changing my foot strike. But if you do that long enough in a run, like that could cause another like strain in your body. So fortunately in the first marathon, it didn't pop up. And, I ran into the wall I hit the wall on the first marathon because I didn't fuel properly. I didn't learn how to fuel the right way in my first training, but I figured it out afterwards.
Gotcha. Yeah, you got there's a little trial and error involved in your first marathon for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, let's fast forward to race day because I want to hear about the experience, of course. I guess at the start line day, leading up to the start line, feeling nerves, feeling pretty good, feeling confident. How were you feeling?
I was definitely a little nervous, in that first one. I think I had run up to 18 miles in that first training cycle, and so that was probably like for me at my pace, maybe like just over 3 hours or around 3 hours. Then I'm thinking, okay, like now I'm going to add another 8. You know, like this is so much more. Because 18 is a lot, but then, you know, another 8 is almost another half, you know, of like 18. So it like mentally felt like a lot more. The marathon I did was a pretty small one. So there wasn't like a lot of crowds. And that was like an interesting thing because, this was during COVID. And so it was like people were doing all the virtual marathons. So I basically did a virtual Boston marathon. It was a local one back at home. And so it was like, there was maybe only 25 or 30 people.
Oh, wow. Really small.
So it was really small. And it was just like there was no, the roads weren't blocked off or anything. So it was like, I was running in the road with cars. And so it was a very different experience from from the majority of the other races I've done. So there was like a lot of alone, like I ran with my father-in-law. So like he and I ran together. But then at one point he started slowing down and I was like, I'm trying to break 4 hours like this. I'm going to do this, you know, so then I took off, but I wasn't fueling, you know, hadn't fueled properly. So then he ended up catching back up with me and then I finished a little bit after him. But yeah, it was just a lot of stretches of like by yourself, like, and so like mental, like that's the toughest part. Like I've done a few other I've done Boston Marathon and it's like crowds, like almost the entire way, like 95% of the way. So there is a lot of like energy. And so on some of the small, like a smaller one, like this one, the first one I did, it's a lot more mental, like pushing through, like you're just you and your thoughts, you know, or you and your music. And so it's definitely a different experience. I would say probably a little nervous leading up to it, but then like you start and then you just start running and then you're in it and then just keep going, you know?
Yeah. It's like a moment of acceptance. Like you start and you're like, all right, whatever happens, happens, but I'm here, you know?
It's kind of a weird feeling. It is. Like, especially like if you've done like some of the bigger, like a bigger one, like Boston or Philly or one of those, like there's thousands and thousands of people and you're walking like a half mile to the start line and you just keep walking and walking and walking. And then all of a sudden there's the start and then you just go.
Yeah.
It's like, there it is. And then, you know, you're like, now you're running for another 26 miles. That's the weird thing of interesting thing about Boston is a lot of people meet in Boston and then they take the school buses back to the start line and it's a point to point. So you're in a bus for 45 minutes driving from the finish line to the start line. And the whole time, like, I'm going to run this far.
Right.
No, it's like, it's pretty much hugs the course pretty closely and you're,
it's
like
crazy to think about.
Yeah, I'm gonna, it's just this bus ride took 45 minutes and I'm gonna run that.
Right No, it's a crazy feeling. Yeah, and it's like you, when you're at the start line, you're all excited. This is where people fall into the trap of going out too fast, but the energy's there, you're all excited, you're ready to get going, and then it like comes to a halt and you have to center yourself, be like, all right, we're gonna be here for a minute, and then it gets exciting again. So it is this like weird roller coaster of emotions from the start line for sure.
That's the biggest, that's one of the number one mistakes people at Boston make, because the first like out the gate is very pretty downhill, and the first like the first 6 miles is like for sure net downhill, and then over like the first 16 is net downhill, and then it finally starts to go back up. But going out too hot is a thing. I did it my first one, and then I learned my lesson.
I think we all did it for our first one, so we'll do a pass. But cool. You said for your first marathon that you hit the wall. Talk a little bit more about that. Like, when did you hit the wall? What were you feeling? What were you saying to yourself to push through? The first time that you hit that.
Well, I had heard people say, oh, you're going to hit the wall in the marathon. And I was like, oh, like, not me, you know? My fueling strategy in that training was, you know, we had the group that I joined, they called them Water Angels. They were a couple of volunteers that would set up a table with snacks and electrolytes and stuff at certain like stops. So we would do like, you know, at mile 5, mile 10, but they had a lot of like, they would have, you know, you could have like watermelon or like bananas, but there's also like Swedish fish and like M&Ms and just like stuff like that. But then also like Gatorade endurance formula. And so for me, I was like, oh, like I like Swedish fish. Like I'll just have Swedish fish. And so like I was figuring out what works for me, but like, I was like, well, this is enjoyable. I'm like get to have candy while I'm running. And so I did that for my training, but then that was just, and it worked for my training, but it wasn't enough for me in that marathon.
Sure.
And it just, I think it was enough to get to 18, but not like, but like it just, my body was maybe depleted in training and I just didn't know it.
Yeah.
And what ended up also happening is like, eventually you get sick of eating Swedish fish. Like like, it's like chewy and like it gets stuck in your teeth and you're like hot and sweaty and thirsty. And eventually I was like, I don't want this anymore, but then I know I need it. So I think I probably hit it at around 21 or 22. And there was a long gap between like the next water stop. Again, this was a very small marathon, so there wasn't like stops every mile or two. So like I went like a long stretch with nothing. I had my handheld with my endurance formula, but I didn't have anything else that I could add in. And you know what's funny is my father-in-law's friend drove up at one point and got out of the car. I was like, hey, I've got goose, or like goose for you, you know. And it wasn't a goo, it was something else. And I remember my coach had said, like, don't try something new on race day. Don't do anything new. And so I like turned it down. And my father-in-law was like, you shouldn't have done that. You don't ever know if you're going to need that. And I had no idea. I wish I would have taken it, because then I could have had something at 22, mile 22 or 23. I ended up, it was the first time I ended up walking, like in all of my training. I was like, I'm going to push through, I'm going to run through everything in training. And then I got to like 21 or 22 and I was like, shoot, like I started really slowing down. Like my pace came real far back. And then I started having to walk, and like mentally I knew I was only like 3 or 4 miles away. So I was like, I know I can get there, but it just went from like, it's funny because I think I mentioned before, I was like, he and I were running together and then he started to slow down. I was like, I feel great. And I like kept on pushing. And I don't know if it was that or a combination of that, and then like really not having the right fuel, that then I really had to pull back. And then he caught up with me and then passed. And I started walking quite a bit, which was, that was tough for me, because I had never walked in any of those trainings. Now, as I progressed and like started doing over multiple marathons and like getting into ultras, like I actually love the running and walking strategy. Like I do that in ultras, and it works amazing. And actually my wife did she did a couch to marathon last year, and that was the strategy we started to use. It was like, it's very effective. But at the time I was like, I'm not going to walk. I have to run this. I'm running the marathon. I even had said to my father-in-law, I was like, I'm not stopping at the water stops. I'm going to run every single step of this. And then the very first water stop at mile 1, he saw someone he hadn't seen in 20 years. And he's like, oh, I got to talk to him. And I was like, I was trying to keep on running. And then I was like, oh, there we go. But eventually I realized like that doesn't matter. Like I remember thinking it does. And I talk with a lot of other people who are doing their first marathon. Like, I'm not going to walk. And I'm like, just get to the water stop, grab the water, and walk for 30 seconds. Don't splash it all over yourself, and then just start running again. It's fine.
Yeah.
But I went through that too. I was like, no way, I'm not walking. And I was like, I was making my life hard. And then I got over that.
Right. No, I always tell people, your first marathon, you're going to PR no matter what. So this is the one to walk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
This is the one to practice things. But totally get it. It's that like all or nothing mindset. I think when you're in that, right, going through your first marathon, you just don't know what you don't know. So you think that you need to do these things, and like you convince yourself that there's one way to do these. And then I think your father-in-law is a great example of maybe like maturing a little bit more as a runner on that first race, of just being like, you know, hey, I'm going to take my time today. I'm going to say hi to people. I'm going to enjoy my experience, get my money's worth. And I think it's a more enjoyable experience when you kind of like take that back seat.
It's much more enjoyable, and it's very effective. My wife and I did Boston this year, and this was her second. We were we just had some trips, and we were undertrained for sure. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was a little worried about it. And I was like, you know what? You and I need to commit to run, walk from the beginning. Like, we have to do this, because the year prior, she wanted to run the whole thing, and we pushed, and we got to the hills in Boston, like Heartbreak Hill and all of that. And then really slows you back. But if you've pushed for 16 miles and then you hit you still got a long way to go.
Right. Yeah.
And so we were in a training run where I was like, we were running and it felt hard. Like, it's just, you do this, like, you know, some runs you feel great. Some runs you're just like, this just feels tough. My legs feel heavy. Like, I don't feel like agile. I just feel slow.
Yeah.
And then her and I were like, we walked and then we picked it back up. And then all of a sudden I was like, I feel like pretty good. And I was like, how do you feel? And she's like, I feel pretty good. Like, I feel like we're actually going faster than before. And I said, yeah, we really should consider this for this marathon, like right from the beginning, on when you need it. Cause when you need it, it's too late. And what's funny is we ended up attracting like a group of like five or six other people in the marathon. They were like, oh, you're doing the run walk. And like, I had it all down, was like, we're doing 4 minute run, 1 minute walk, 4 minute run, 1 minute walk. And so I ended up with a bunch of people that stayed with us for like 20 miles, all doing the same thing. And it's just, it was way more enjoyable. I think one of the things that I learned is that when it gets really tough, if you look at your heart rate is probably like up at the max.
Yeah.
And that's when it's like really, really tough. And if you look at your heart rate when you do the run walk, it takes way longer to get up there. Like, it kind of bumps up and then it stays for me like in the 130s or 140s. But if I really push, I'm in the 180s, and that's when I start really, really feeling like, oh my God, this is tough. Like, your mind starts like, what am I doing? And like,
yeah.
But if you can keep your heart rate down, then it really is a much more like mentally enjoyable experience.
Totally. Yeah. No, that's cool. Were you following the run walk method that you guys did? Was it the Galloway method, or was it something like you came up on your own, or?
I believe it comes from it.
From the Galloway method.
Yeah. Cool. I believe it does. My coach had said, the first time I ever did it, I did an 8-2. So 8-minute run, 2-minute walk. I've also done like a 7-3 minute. Like, so it's always adds up to 10.
Yeah.
But then I heard someone say that actually the recommendation is to do it shorter, because if you walk for more than like 30 seconds, your muscles actually start to cool down.
Oh,
and
sure.
Then you have to warm them back up, and it's actually it's less efficient. So we did a 4-1 the whole way.
I like it. No, I've heard the same thing with the Galloway method. I haven't tried it myself, but like, people have running faster times than they did when they ran all the way through. So it clearly works. That's pretty cool.
My wife, she PR'd for her second marathon doing this.
That's great. And
definitely undertrained from the first year. Like, the first year was just like, never done this before, have to do everything perfectly.
Yeah.
And then we ran, and you know, she did the same thing like I did. Like, I want to run the whole thing. And then we hit the hills, and it's like, okay, we got to walk. But now at this point, it's like, it's more of just like a fight to get across the finish line. But when we did the run walk from the beginning, it was not a fight. I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, that's great. It's a good feeling when you cross the finish line and it's not every single thing in you that you just gave, you know, like, you actually get to enjoy the finish line. So that's great.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break from the episode to share some really exciting news. For the first time ever, I'm opening up spots for marathon coaching this fall. So if you'll be training for your first marathon, getting back into running, or just want a plan that actually fits your life, I'd love to support you and work with you. Spots will be limited, so if you're interested, I have a waitlist you can join in October. I'll be choosing one lucky runner to receive free coaching for a race of your choice. You can find it in the show notes, in my Instagram bio, or right on the homepage at myfirstmarathon.co. Now, back to the episode. Well, cool. Well, obviously, we crossed the finish line for your first marathon. How did that feel? What were you thinking from there? Like, did you immediately think, I'm going to continue this? This is my thing now? Or what were you thinking?
No, being that I had, hit the wall, like crossing the finish line was not how I envisioned it. Like, I crossed it standing, and but then had to lay down for a while. I didn't feel that great. Like, I had pushed my body to like its limits. Absolutely was not thinking I'm going to do this again in that moment. I think a lot of runners probably get to the finish line and are like, yeah, I'm not going to do that again. And then like, 3 days later, they're like, you know, looking up the next,
yeah, maybe
the
I'll
next
do this
one.
Again. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yes. So it took me a little bit. I was also just like hard on myself a little bit, cause I was like, had this expectation. It really comes back down to like the expectations, like I'm going to break 4 hours in my first marathon. And like, I trained for that, but I also like, there's so many new things when you're training for a marathon. Like, you know, like I did some speed tests, like in my long runs, and was like, okay, I am on track for this. But I also, but what it comes down to is I was not fueling correctly. So it was not as exciting as of a moment for me, because I was like beat up from the hitting the wall. Sure. And was like laying there, and I was like, my mom was like, you didn't look really happy. I was like, well, this was really friggin' hard. I don't know. Like, I thought I would run across the finish line feeling great. Yeah. But I mean, it's kind of a, like, probably like a little bit of a, it's a naive expectation. You've never run before. You're going to go run for 4 hours. And this was in the, when was this? This was September, October timeframe. It was still pretty warm too. So it was like sunny day, pretty hot. Like, but I mean, I think after like I got some chocolate milk and like recovered, like I was very proud of myself. But in the moment, it was just like one of those, like you gave it everything you got, and then like you have to lay down for the next 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it takes a second to process it sometimes, but it's good that you had a chance to kind of process it on the back end. I think sometimes, like you said, it takes a minute for that everything to really sink in and to decide what your next move is going to be. I was going to say, we talking before in some of the information you gave me before, I know you really turned it up from there. You ran four the next year after you ran your first marathon. So talk to us about some of the changes that you were planning on making. Obviously, it sounds like fuel was something that you were needing to dial in, but what were some of those changes that you were thinking leading into your next few marathons?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, like you said, like I finished and I was like, probably never going to do this again. And I don't know how long it took me to change my mind on that. But then I was like, well, I'm going to go do four now, you know, and a lot of people are like, oh, you're going to get hurt. Like, don't do that. Like, you know, that's too much. And it's funny, like, I didn't know anyone who was doing four, like that many at the time. But like, there are, you know, if you start following the running community, there are people that are running like an insane number of marathons and doing it healthy. I actually, in one of those four marathons, there's like a series in New England, and I forget what it's like, the Old Colony marathons, but it's like they do one marathon in each of the New England states in consecutive days. So it's like Maine, Vermont, or Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Mass, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and I think they throw a New York one in there if you want to do as like an optional seventh. But there was two guys in there. One of them was like is like the most marathons run in the United States. It was like 1500 or something.
Oh my gosh.
That.
Yeah. Crazy.
And then the second guy was, or the third guy was at like 700. He's like in his 70s doing the run walk, but like he was there and you're like, wow, these guys just did seven in 7 days.
But
some of the changes, I just really wanted to push myself. I think it was like, wow, okay, like I've said for years I will run a marathon, but not now. I did, like, what more could I do? And so then I was like, I'm gonna do four. And the reason I came up with that was like, well, I can do two marathons for one training, so I'll like train in the spring, I'll do my first one, and then I'll find a marathon maybe 3 weeks, 4 weeks later where I can kind of just like maintain and then have the second. So that's what I ended up doing. The biggest change for me was the fueling. That was like the one thing that really didn't go quite well for me in the first one, just by nature of hitting the wall. At what I ended up switching to, the Goos, I've always had a trouble, just the consistency just did not work for me. I do, and I've been doing this ever since, is the Vermont maple syrups, the untapped.
Oh, yeah, those are great. Yeah.
So I pack like six of those with me for any marathon, and I usually use five, and I always have a sixth just in case I lose one or need one. So that was the biggest difference for me is that, and then I do the Gatorade Endurance. And then I really started paying attention to when. So like, the first one I did in that series of four was Boston Marathon. And I planned it based off of like I got very like technical with it after like, so I was like, okay, let me look at the course profile and like, all right, I'm gonna do it at mile 5, 10, 14, 18, 22.
Yeah.
And that's what I've done. I've done 3 or 4 Bostons now, and I same thing every time, and it works. And I, in that window, I also know that I probably need to refill my water bottle 4 times. It's like a 16 ounce with a Gatorade Endurance. Start with one full, and then I'm going to refill it 4 times about. Now, if it's hot, it's going to be more.
Sure.
I've gotten pretty good, I think, about like just listening to my body. But like that comes with like a lot of, you know, a good amount of training.
Yeah.
That was the big thing. So I really started, like, I got rid of all the candy. I stopped with that. It was just like syrup, maple syrup at like roughly in at every hour or 5-ish miles, and the Gatorade Endurance. And I paid very close attention to that. And then that was the second marathon I did. I wouldn't say I hit a wall, but I got to the Heartbreak Hill, and that's like at there's a stretch of hills from mile 16 to 20. So you run downhill for about 16, and then you're in an uphill section for, I mean, it's rolling uphills,
sure,
but for about the next 4 miles. And that was harder than I anticipated. And I remember now, that was the one I went out hot at the start.
Gotcha.
So I had a pacing bracelet. I don't know if you've seen these, but they're a bracelet you can buy where you can go to it. They do it for the major marathons.
Yeah.
But it knows the course profile, and you can put in there, I want to start. I'm going to start slow or start fast, and like, or I want negative splits or I want positive splits. And you put your target time in, and you can say also like, or I want an even effort, meaning I'm just going to try to maintain an even effort. And so in that, if it's an uphill, it would tell you to run this slower. And if it's downhill, you'd run it a little faster. And that would hopefully keep you at an even effort. And what I did in the beginning was, there's so many people at the start that the average pace was probably a 10-minute mile. Mm-hmm. And I was targeting like an 8:45 or a 9-minute mile. And so I was like minutes behind, and I was like, I got to go quicker. So I started weaving in and out of people, uses a ton of energy, and it doesn't feel like it in the moment because you're fresh, but it uses a ton of energy.
Yeah.
So I was on the curb, off the curb, speeding up to get by somebody. And that was the lesson that I learned there. But I finished that Boston probably, I think I ran that one around like 4:07. I think it was like pretty good. Pretty like my goal was to break 4.
Yeah.
4:07 was pretty good.
That's great.
Much better than my first. I think my first one was more like 4:25. So it was like a good step in the right direction.
Sure.
But it was really like, I still hit it wasn't a mental wall like the first one, but it was definitely like I overdid it in the beginning. I didn't realize it. Like,
sure.
I tried to make up all that time loss in the beginning, and I did it real fast. Like, I caught up to my target by halfway through, and I was like, this is great. I'm back on pace. And I told my coach afterwards, she was like, oh no, that's way too fast. Like, I was like, oh, I was beating my times by like 30 seconds per mile or whatever. And she's like, oh no, that's way too fast. You got to be like, if you're trying to catch up, it's like 4 seconds or 5 seconds, not 30. That was way. I was like, oh, I had no idea.
Yeah.
So another lesson. But yeah, then I ran the first one, maintained, ran the second one, had a little bit of like an injury, not an injury, but I started noticing just like tightness. And maybe this was just like, ran the first one, and maybe I probably wasn't stretching as much like in the middle there. And it ended up just being like a tightness in like my hip flexor. And so like, I've just realized it important. I mean, I was stretching and like, but I wasn't like, again, like as in tune with everything. And then that was a lot of walk run to like push through. And then, I think I took a little bit of a break, which I've been learning is like very important. Like when, for that year, I ran the whole year, like, you know, from January all the way through May or June, and then started back up, I think in the middle of June, and then ran and then trained all the way. And it was a lot. And I was like,
yeah,
I don't know if I want to do that again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like all summer, like, you know, it's like 4 or 5 months, and then there's really no like break and like recovery. And then it felt more like a job than it did, than it did. I'm glad I did it though, because like I had the desire and I was like, I'm going to push myself to do this.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have known, but now, like I said, I'm up here in Maine. And one thing I learned was like, when I was doing that, I was not enjoying the lake on vacation as much because I was running all the time. So like this lake, to run this lake is a 9.5 miles. And so we usually do that as a tradition every year. We run the lake together. But then I had to do 18 miles one day during my training. I was like, I guess I'm going to run it twice. I'll run it once this way and once the other way. And it felt like, oh, like I'm not fishing and doing all the other things that normally I would do because I like prioritized over here. So I'm glad I did it though, because it was like a lot of people were like, oh, you can't do that. Like, you're going to hurt yourself. And finally, by the end of the year, I did the Philly Marathon, which is a really, really cool one. I actually ended up doing the challenge, which is, I think, what do they call it? The Liberty Challenge is what they call it. It was like the half marathon, then an 8K, and then the full the next day.
Dang, so
it was
that's a lot. Yeah.
And I PR'd too.
Nice. So, nice. That's great.
This was how I finally PR'd and broke. That was breaking 4. I ran 16 of those miles with my coach, actually.
So we
were down there together, and we did the half marathon, then the 8K on the first day. And then standing at the starting line of the marathon, my legs were sore. And I was like, oh, I've never experienced this before, like being sore and achy to start. I was like, how is this going to go? And her and I were like, let's just take it easy. We'll run together. And the biggest lesson that she taught me there was, there was like an overpass we were going up. And so that's always a hill. And I was kind of keeping my even effort pace. But in my mind, I was thinking like, I need to, that bracelet says, here's your target time for mile 6, mile 7, mile 8. And it's taking into account course profile. And my mind was thinking, I need to maintain that pace for that entire from mile 6 to mile 7. But what that meant was, if there was little hills up or down in the middle, that means I was speeding, like I was putting more effort to keep that pace uphill. And then I would pull back on the downhill.
Gotcha.
So we hit that first hill and she was like, no, you don't need to run up this, like pull back. You don't need to run up this so fast. Remember, it's even effort. And I was like, yeah, but this is the pace. And she goes, this is the pace for this section. She's like, no, like that's the average pace, which means that when we get to the backside of this overpass, we'll pick up the pace a little bit because it'll feel even effort. And so we did that the whole time, and I conserved way more energy by doing that. And then she ended up not feeling it. Like, she's like, hey, like I can tell, like you're going to hit, you keep going, I'm going to pull back. And I ended up running a 3:57.
Nice.
And that was like, my goal was always to break 4. You know, I wanted to do it my first one and then miss. And then I wanted to do it in the Boston. And then I think it was, like I said, 7 minutes back. And I was like, now I'm starting to think, oh, like, am I ever going to get there? You know? And then didn't have any expectation of doing that in this one because of the challenge. And then I did. And that was like probably the that one, and then one of my others was probably like the best feeling, because like I really did not expect to, but I had been wanting to for over a year. And then started getting towards the end, I'm like, I think I could do this. But then I was like, started being like, I don't know, like you've thought that before, you know. And so I'm trying to keep like the positive
self-doubt. Yeah.
Try to keep the positive things in. And one of the things I had learned from one of the running videos I watched, but it was like, have a couple of phrases that you like repeat to yourself. Like, I actually used to work at Peloton, and so I was pretty big in like with using the Peloton, like, for training. I actually did use them for one of my marathon trainings, and I think it was Matt Wilpers said, like, the first 2/3 you run smart, and then the last third you run with your heart. So, like, the first 2/3 is just like, run your pace, run your marathon, don't worry about what everybody else is doing. But then when you get to the last third of the marathon, it's long, but it's a short enough time where you can run with your heart and push through, like, and you're going to need to push through. So that was like one of the things that I was like reminding, like saying to myself. The other one was like, the job's not done. Like, you're like, feels like you're pretty close. Like, you're going to do this, but you still got another mile or two. Like, it's not done. Like, you got to get there first. So,
yep. I love that. We love mantras. Anything that can really pull you forward in that moment. Like, you could be saying crazy things to yourself internally, but whatever's going to keep you moving forward, I think is great. But it sounds like you made a lot of adjustments from your first marathon for these subsequent marathons. And I think it is always funny that it works out like that. The race that you don't expect to go well, I kind of had a similar experience. It's like the race you put no expectations on seems to be the race where the pieces all fall together. I don't know why that is. Have you thought about maybe why that happened the way that it did for that race, or have you had some time to like kind of reflect on that? It's a tricky question because I don't know if I could answer it myself. It's just it's an interesting phenomenon that I see, you know, on these stories all the time.
Yeah, you know, it's like it's funny because back to like with the expectations thing. I think it was the second marathon, like the second Boston I did. Again, I had that expectation and I missed it by 20 seconds. So I finished at 4 hours, and I think it was that it might've been, can't remember which year at this point, but like my goal was to break it at that Boston and I missed it by 20 seconds. And I was like, clearly, like, you know, and you're trying to be positive, but I'm like, obviously like this is not going to happen for me, you know? Mm. And so then, but it was, again, I had that expectation that I was going to show up and I was going to beat it. And I missed it. By that point, though, so I did the 3:57 at Philly. The next Boston, I did 3:53. Like, so now all of a sudden, it's like that hurdle. Like, I think they talked about, like, it's the four, was it the four-minute mile. Uh-huh. No one could do it. So, yeah, it was like, I wanted to do it at Boston. The first one was 4:07. Then I wanted to do it again. And then it was 4 hours and 20 seconds, which is like no time, you know, I probably could have just pushed a little hard, you know, just a little harder for a lot, you know, and probably done it. 'Cause 20 seconds is really, it's less than a second per mile.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
And then, I didn't have the expectations at Philly. And then I got to Boston the next one and did 3:53. And I like felt great. Like I finished at like under a 7 minute mile. Like it was way faster than like what my average pace is. So I think I don't know the answer to your question.
Yeah.
But there's like several pieces of evidence that support like not having the expectation and then things just work out better.
Yeah. Easier said than done, right? To not put expectations on yourself. But I do think it's interesting that, as soon as we can kind of take the pressure off of ourselves, it seems like the pieces tend to click into place. Yeah.
It's like you want to have the goal. Mm-hmm. You want to set a goal for yourself so that you have a target of what to try to achieve, but then kind of like separating yourself from the goal, like achieving the goal doesn't make you like more worthy or not worthy. It's like, it is a journey along the way. And then like hitting the time is like, it's almost like irrelevant, but you know, it's like what matters is like what you're doing and who you are becoming from the beginning to then. But then we all focus on like, because it's very easy to be like, did I hit it or did I not hit it?
Right.
You know, and it's like the goal, like setting the goal is the important part, because I went from someone who was not running marathons to now all of a sudden I was running marathons. And that's a very big difference in who I was before and after, because there's very few people that you're in a community full of runners and you're speaking to a lot of people, but like it's still only, what is it? 1% of people will ever run.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Run one marathon. But it's hard in the moment to then not hit it and then still be happy with the journey and everything. But then after some time, a little reflection, like, well, this is not something I've ever done before.
Yeah. Yeah. You can kind of sit in it and realize how cool it is. I always tell people like you, if you can't have a moment after a marathon where you sit and go, I just ran a marathon. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Then you didn't take enough time to process it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that you probably put a little bit too much pressure on yourself and your goals. If you're sitting in that point after you ran 26.2 miles, it's a success in itself every single time you do it. So,
absolutely. Yeah,
I think you said that perfectly though. I love the goals are important, but I think being able to like take a step back and think critically about what's happening is also really important in the goal process for sure. Yeah. Well, cool. Well, I want to make sure we save some time to talk about what you've been doing for your live stream stuff as well.
Sure.
And what that whole experience looked like. Do you mind kind of giving us an idea of timeline wise when this all started for you and how that kind of, you know, came about?
So my grandmother ended up passing away in 2020 from a stroke. So this was like, you know, when the world kind of shut down and like, you know, she ended up having a stroke and then ended up in a, you know, care facility, and then we, you know, you couldn't go inside because of COVID rules and all of that stuff. And at the time, I like really didn't know, I didn't even know what a stroke was, you know, like I'd heard of it a couple of times, but I didn't know like how it was caused and like what the symptoms were. All I know is like when I was, you know, we were talking to her through the window, it was like, I didn't understand. I couldn't even understand what she was saying. And it was like, wow, like that happened. Like, not, you know, just one day she was fine. And the next day, like completely different. And I was in my running, in my training for my first marathon, there was somebody on the team who had gone on to Teddy's team, which is Teddy Bruschi's foundation for stroke and heart disease. Mm-hmm. And so Teddy played for the New England Patriots in the early 2000s, and he had a stroke at 31 or 33. And I know he had two. And so he had while he was playing, and then, you know, had to go to recover, but then came back and started playing again. And someone in my running group actually was on their team and mentioned it. And I was like, oh, like that would make sense. Like make, you know, just the timing of everything to like come across her, and she was running for the charity and then telling me what it was about. And I was like, oh, like that would be great. Like I would love to support the cause, especially what just happened with my grandmother, like would love to run the Boston Marathon as well. So like, let me see if I can, you know, apply and get in. Yeah. And I got in on my first try, but it was like very, like I think they might have had someone that backed out really, really late. So I got in onto the team like well into January, which is pretty late.
Yeah.
And with that comes, you know, this was fundraising for the first time. You know, I really never did anything like that. So it was, you know, raising $7,500 is like, that keeps a lot of people from doing it. I remember like, this is kind of like, you know, with a marathon, it's like, can I do this? Right? Like, can I raise $7,500? Like, what if I don't? It's like, well, you're actually on the hook for it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like,
you actually put your credit card in before.
It's raised one way or another.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so that's another thing too, is just like that there's some accountability, right?
Totally.
Like, so that was like a big, like that was the, so I was running the marathon for the Boston for the first time. That was my second overall marathon. And then all of a sudden learning how to fundraise, and like, I've never done that before. And like, that's a pretty big number. And a lot of people are like, oh, how, you know, they're like, this is great cause what you're doing, but like, oh my God, how are you going to raise that? Like, you know, they want to be supportive, but then they're also like being like casting doubt. Like, how are you going to do this?
Yeah.
But we did, we ended up raising, I think it was just over $8,000 in the first time.
That's and great.
Then I was like, really love the team, love the mission, like what we were doing. There's a lot of great people involved in the organization. It just felt like another great running community to be a part of. And so then it's like, hey, I applied again. And so then joined the following year. And then it was when in my third year, my wife now is watching me run all these marathons and was like, started getting that bug of like, I think I might want to run. So then we ran together with Teddy's team. So we both got in as a couple,
cool.
Which increased. So it was like the amount of fundraising increased by double. So we're like, okay, we have to do something different here to be able to raise more money, raise more awareness. What can we do? And I saw somebody on, it was Chad Wright. He's like a big ultra marathoner, like Navy SEAL type guy. And he did a 24-hour treadmill run, like live streamed. And he raised $250,000 in one day for veterans. And I was like, well, shoot, like if he can do $250,000 in a day, like this is clearly like a good way to raise like awareness and raise money.
Yeah.
Why don't I do something similar? And so I had it in my mind for a very long time. And at this point now I've been like really training myself to, if I've got it in my mind, I got to do it, versus like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I was like, I'll run a marathon, but then I don't. And I was like, I was getting frustrated with being the person who'd say they would do something but wouldn't. So now like I've started really training myself to do the opposite, which is if that's in my mind, I have to go do this. And so it was in my mind for like 8 months, because I saw that like, you know, in the June timeframe, and I'm like, if I get on the team next year, this is what I'm going to do. And sure enough, I got on the team, and then, you know, but they were saying, hey, this is a lot more money for you to raise. Like, what is your plan? How are you going to do this? And I was like, okay, this sounds crazy, but I'm going to run 12 hours on the treadmill and I'm going to live stream the entire thing. And we're going to raise, you know, money leading up to it. We're going to have an event in the store. Like, we're going to have people coming in and we're going to turn it into this big, like, local community thing. And that's what we did. So I found two of the self-powered treadmill. I wanted to use a self-powered treadmill, like, just because of the noise.
Sure.
So we used, found a local gym that had those. He packed them into his truck, brought them to the running store. We like took over the running store and set up cameras. I actually have a friend from my engineering days who turned into a live stream DJ. She drove up from Washington, D.C. She actually drove up from D.C., stayed with us. She brought all her equipment. And we had, you know, three camera angles. And she had made this whole program where it, like, you know, flipped from this angle to this angle to this angle. And we had the local news showed up three times and, like, interviewed me while they loved it. It was, like, while I was on the treadmill, they were interviewing me, asking me questions and stuff. So we were on the news. We spread a lot of awareness. We got a lot more people to come into the store. And another cool thing we did was we brought two treadmills in, and the second we ended up filling up as like a relay. So it was me for the full 12 hours. And then it was a second treadmill of, how many people was it? 24 people running 30-minute intervals. So I ran with people the whole time. And so that was like what I didn't realize at the time. It was like the best thing for me to do.
Oh, yeah,
like,
that's mentally a great idea. Sure.
Yeah. So like every 30 minutes was like a new conversation and, like, you know, just chatting about running or other thing, whatever it was, but it like kept me pretty sane throughout. I had some doubts leading up to it because I was putting myself out there in front of how, like, it was streamed on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, and it's not like I have a massive following, but like I am putting myself out there in front of people, like to go like I had never run that long, so it's 12 hours, like never, like there's a lot that can go wrong in 12 hours. Fueling, bathroom, like a lot of things. And so that was like the ultimate form of accountability was like, I have to do it. I cannot not finish. Like, I've been marketing this for 3 months, telling everyone this is what I'm going to do. The news is here. Like, I have to finish.
Yeah, a lot of pressure. Yeah.
Yeah. But I did. Like, and so like, that accountability helped me get through it. And we ended up doing it again this year and grew it a little bit further to the point where, like, you know, we've got some like local businesses and some of my friends' businesses sponsoring the event. Like, we, you know, we share them on the stream. And so it's something that, you know, we plan to keep on doing because it reaches a lot more people. And the goal is really to just share the warning signs of stroke, raise money for a good cause. And it's also a cool, you know, little event inside of the running community.
Oh, I love that. That's great. I'm sure your local community was like stoked about it too. You were saying the news was coming by, you were running with people. Like, that's gotta be great for your just like local community around you too.
Absolutely.
What were the rules? Like, you couldn't walk, were like the rules of the whole thing?
Well, you know, I set up the rules. So I went back to, I'm going to run the entire time.
Sure.
But then I started realizing, mentally, running 12 hours straight this is so hard already. Like, I've never run over, I had run 11 hours. I did an ultra marathon prior. So like, I at least had kind of, I'm in the ballpark of this.
Yeah.
But I did the run walk there too. And one of the other things that, aside from the, like, keeping your heart rate down, what the run walk does is it completely breaks up the challenge mentally, because if you want to run 12 hours straight, you have like 12 straight hours that you will not stop.
Sure.
But if you break it down into like what I did was an 8-2, it's like I just have to run for 8 minutes and then I get to walk for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And I think I had to do that 75 times or however many times it was.
Insane. Yeah.
But like it completely chunks down the challenge into it, like when you talk about this for like business or anything else, but like breaks it down into like bite-sized pieces, you're like, oh, it's only more 8 more minutes. Like I can run this section. Like, you know, hour 10 or 11, you're like, I'm getting kind of sick of doing this.
Sure.
But you're like, but I only have to run for 8 more minutes and then I can walk for 2.
Yeah.
I ended up, I started at running the whole time and I was like, this is crazy. Like, just get, like, do what you need to do to make sure, like, you can, because you got to finish too. Then the other rule I had was I didn't want to go to the bathroom at all because I wanted to be on the treadmill for 12 hours.
Sure.
And at hour 10, I was like, yeah, I think I'm good to, like, there's no need to, like, put myself through any more pain. So I, like, stepped off for, like, it was like a minute and a half. Like, I stepped off, went to the bathroom.
I think that's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. People didn't even catch it. No one really caught it. Like, did you even go? I was like, that was actually the number one question I got. Like, no, it was like, how are you going to do 12 hours? It was like, what is he going to do for the bathroom? So it's like, well, yeah, I just decided, like, if I need to go, I'm just going to go. Sure. I was hoping I wouldn't have to. But yeah, I was like, I don't need to push this anymore. Cause you drink you're drinking a lot of liquids. Yeah. I think I had a gallon of Endurance formula. And I had like a couple pounds of potatoes and the syrups. And when you start running that distance, you need to have a variety of food and you need to have real food.
Right, right.
Your body goes through craving different things. And I realized it craves different things based off the actual nutrient that it needs. So like you're craving something salty, it's probably that your body is like, yeah, I need some more salt. And like, I need some more salt. Or if you're thirsty, like if your mouth feels dry, it's like simply you need more water.
Yeah.
Not necessarily carbs or electrolytes, but you need more water. Yeah, those were the rules. Was like, I'm just going to run 8-2. And I did stick to the 8-2 on my first one. The second one, I was a little bit more lax about it. I was like, you know, doesn't like what matters is the distance and the, you know, push. It doesn't matter. I don't mean the distance. What matters is just staying on for the time that I said, you know, it's not whether I ran. Cause the first one, my watch told me I did a double marathon. So it was like 52.4. But that's not what really matters, right? Like, sure, what really matters is like, getting the cause out there and sharing the warning signs of stroke and like just bringing the community together. Like, that's what matters. This is like the whole, like, I got to finish in 4 hours or whatever, you know, it's like that stuff doesn't. Getting a little better about that, you know?
Yeah.
And so I eased up a little bit and was like, yeah, we could do an 8-2. And what a game changer that is on that distance. Cause it just, it prevents you from thinking about how daunting, like, what's left is.
Sure. Sure. Especially in doing something like that. Like, I can imagine that the mental, if you get into that mental pit, it's going to be a really long time for you to sit there in that feeling, or it's going to be really hard to pull yourself out of that feeling. So I can imagine something like that, like, helps break up the mental side for sure.
Especially on a treadmill. Like, most people find the treadmill pretty boring and like,
yeah.
I don't love it either. Like, I actually never trained on the, in all of my marathons, I never once trained on the treadmill. Like, I thought it was really, for me, I thought it was really important to be in the elements because I can't control what the weather is going to be on race day. So if it was snowing, I ran. If it was raining, I ran. I didn't look at what the weather was. And then it was like, nope, I run in the mornings. And that was another thing that I did too, is I did everything in the morning so that nothing else could get in the way. I've since switched that up a little bit because I've got my business and everything. And like, I was basically like a semi-pro runner without the sponsorships, you know, like I was like top 1% of Garmin for like, my watch was like 1% of all runners for steps or all of Garmin for steps and for miles. And I was like, yeah, this is kind of a lot. Like, I took this a little farther.
Sure.
That's
okay. It swings that way sometimes. And then you learn and you make mistakes, you learn, you move on to the next goal. And, mm-hmm. and that's what the beauty of running is. You can keep kind of reinventing yourself in the different seasons that you're in. So,
I pulled back a little bit and now I'm like, I'm getting right back ready for like setting a goal and a challenge. I started learning that. Like, I kind of went from never to like, now I got to, like, I'm running all the time and added a few ultras in there. And then I was like, but I also want to enjoy like the lake and like get some fishing in and like no, not every morning go out and run 4 hours, like four hours. Because you, when you do that, if you're dedicated to it, like your world kind of revolve totally around it. Like if you go on a trip or a business trip or a vacation, like how am I going to get my, I went to Europe in the middle of one, and I was like, where am I going to run 10 miles in this small little town with all these cobblestone roads? Like, where
it's a lot of planning.
And then you're bringing all your syrups and electrolytes and water bottle and extra clothes and everything. Like it takes it's a serious commitment.
For sure. It is. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, cool. Well, thank you so much for walking through all of that. That was great getting to know your story a little bit. And it's great getting to hear about this awesome cause that you've been able to do a lot of great work for. I always love, you've put a lot of advice throughout the episode. So this might be a little repetitive, but I always like to just ask for a piece of advice after we hear somebody's story for somebody who's maybe thinking about running their first marathon or training for their first marathon now. So thinking about somebody like that, or you, when you were in that position, like what's some advice you'd offer somebody like that?
I think the biggest thing is the getting around a running community. I think it's like that for as I've gone into the business, like as I've transitioned from engineering into business, was the same thing, was getting around people who are doing something similar. Because, if you have the idea that you want to do the marathon, but there's no one around you, then you just feel like an outsider and no one really, there's no one you can really go to who's going to say like, yeah, that's a good idea. Like, or like from experience, right? Like most of it will be like, what do you want to do that for? You know? And like, then you might not. But then, there's, like this running store, had a couple hundred people in the community. And so I made a lot of friends that way. And you get around a bunch of people who are doing things like what you want to do or grow into. And then it doesn't feel weird anymore. And what started to then feel weird was to not go to the running store on Sunday mornings at 8 o'clock to go do the 12 or 14 or 16 or 18. Like I didn't dare miss that. Cause I was like, they probably wouldn't even remembered, like there's enough people that I wouldn't necessarily, they wouldn't be like, where's Brandon, but like for me, I was like, it would be weird. And like the crew, I know they are showing up. So am I really not going to show up? And that was the biggest thing, like to get started. And then also when it gets really tough, like as you push into month three and your body has been beaten up quite a bit from all the miles. And that's the tension, right? Is like to like progressive overload, get you up to 12, 14, 16, 18 miles. It could be very easy to like be at home and not have a group. Cause I've done this where I've been training off of like the standard cycle. And then to be like, I have to go run 18 today all by myself.
Yeah.
And it's like, what time am I going to do that at? Should I do it at 8 or should I do it midday? And you're like, I don't really want to wake. I'm going to have breakfast first. And then you're like dreading it or whatever. But like, if you have a running community and you know they're running at 8, you just go. Like,
yeah, good accountability. You just go. Sure. Yeah.
So I think that's the biggest thing to get into it and then stay in it would be just join a running community. Most of them are probably pretty inexpensive and you get like a ton of knowledge from like the coaches and like or even me, like I'm not a running coach, but I've run, 3,000-4,000 miles in the last couple of years. Like I have a good amount of experience now. And like, I can really help somebody get from ground zero up to a marathon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like there's just so many things.
Huge, for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. I love that. Well, cool. Well, just to wrap us up, I like to end with a couple fun questions about fuel and shoes. We kind of heard about your fuel, but before we get there, I always give the disclaimer that fuel is your own journey, shoes are your own journey. So go try out everything and anything like we talked about with fuel. Same thing with shoes. Go get your feet measured. Do what's best for you. But for you, I know you said that Untapped was one of your favorites. Any other fuel options that are at the top of your list?
I use strictly now maple syrup and Gatorade Endurance formula.
Love it.
I use the Gatorade Endurance in my handheld for anything that's over an hour. I will use like Noon for, like a 3 mile or 4 mile run. Mm-hmm. And I pretty much always like, I just learn as like, I just want to have the electrolytes in there as opposed to just the water. So, I'll never go out with just water. It'll always be like a Noon for anything under an hour, anything over an hour, Gatorade Endurance. And then, if it's a long run, I did this, my friend got me into running an ultra marathon with him in the mountains in Utah last year. There weren't really any aid stations, so I ended up just getting straight maple syrup from the store and filled up like a 16-ounce soda, like bottle of water, and I drank almost the whole thing.
That's so funny.
It doesn't have to be the untapped, but it can be just, I mean, straight maple syrup. Yeah. It just works.
That's great. Cool. Love it. And then what about shoes? What have you liked for shoes over time?
Yeah, I've switched a few. You know, it's funny, like when I got started, I think it was an Under Armour type of shoe. And I remember just like not wanting to switch because I did my first one in that. And I was like, well, mm-hmm. this worked. I don't want to change it. But I definitely ended up with some like blisters on the sides of my feet, mm-hmm. and they were stiffer shoes. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I don't want to change it because it worked. And then I got into a softer shoe. I think I went into the Asics, and I forget the brand. Although I got around the corner, so I could always go grab it. But I went into Asics, and they were a little bit softer of a shoe. And I was like, oh, I don't like this. This is different. But then after I like ran a couple times with it, I was like, wow, this is way better for me.
Yeah.
And because I mean, I've never used Hokas, but they're definitely like a thicker, like that looks like you're running on a cloud. But some people love it. And I did try that, and I didn't like it personally. But I liked the kind of the middle ground between what I was in before and where I was, because again, I was like, it's not broke. I don't want to fix it.
Yeah.
But then I moved into these ones, and then like my feet were way more comfortable. Like I wasn't getting those blisters. And so I've been pretty much in the Asics, the same Asics for now. The other challenge I ran into, the Under Armours I got, this was like 4 years ago, they had the sensor in them that connected with an app, so it could help you like know your cadence and your stride.
Oh, interesting. That's cool.
Yeah. And so I was like, well, this is cool. And the great thing with that was my stride or my cadence was too slow. So I was not taking enough steps. And I think it's a very common thing with runners is like they're used to taking bigger strides, which is a lot more impactful on your feet.
Yeah.
And also if your foot is, if you're striking in front, then you're almost like breaking yourself. You really want to be striking like right underneath your body. So that really helped me because it was like telling me like in my headphones, like, your stride is still, and like, so within a week or two, I don't know if they still have that, but like within a week or two, my cadence went from probably like 150 up to 170, 180. Yeah. Like I think it's supposed to be around 180. So I started with that, but that was a stiffer shoe.
Sure.
And I didn't want to change it. Got into the Asics, and also there's just a lot more widely available, so I can get it quickly off. Because that was the other big thing I learned. You probably need two sets of shoes.
Mm-hmm.
In a training rotation. Mm-hmm. And I would get the one up front and then I'd use it and then I'd go to get the other one and then it'd be like back ordered, it'd be on a, you know, like get delayed in shipping. This happened to me multiple times, and then now I'm running on dead shoes for a while, and that's like in the peak of training, and that is more likely to lead to, that can lead to injury. And so that started happening with me. Like I started getting like my arches were not supported as they should. So like then I was really starting to get like strains in the arches of my feet. And that's like a really uncomfortable thing as well.
Yeah.
And what I was, you know, I'm just going to buy two sets of shoes from the beginning and I'll either like use one every other, you know, like just flop back and forth as we go, or I'll use one and then I'll just toss that one and then use the new one. So that's another lesson. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's smart. I think that that's a great point. Yeah. The shoe rotation, and it's just good for your feet and ankles to like switch it up sometimes, you know, to not just be running on the same shoes over and over and over again. So that's great.
Yeah. Well, when I did that challenge, I noticed in the Philly marathon, I was at the start line of the marathon and I looked at my coach and I was like, why do you have different shoes on than yesterday? You know, it was like from a bright yellow to a bright pink or something. She's like, oh, you should never wear your shoes in two consecutive runs like that. I'm like, what? Oh. Well, I was like, what? Why didn't you tell me that? And she's like, well, you know, because we have a running store and I don't want people to think that I'm like trying to sell them more shoes.
Sure, sure.
And most people aren't running like the distance, like the amount that you are. I was like, that didn't give me much confidence. I was like, shoot, I didn't know that, like, you know, you run on the shoe and then it can like the foam inside can take a long time to like rebound. And like, you really don't. I mean, it's probably more of an issue for like if you're running a ton of miles. But I was like, dang, I wish he would have told me before the start of the marathon.
For sure. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, shoes are tricky, but I think, like we said, try anything and everything. Get some advice from a coach, you know, talk to your friends that run. It's a journey for sure. But once you find the right shoes, once you find the right shoe rotation, it really does make a huge difference.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely does.
For sure. Well, cool. Well, thank you again. This was great getting to know you, getting to know your story a little bit. And yeah, if anybody wants to follow along with you on socials or anything like that, where can they find you?
Yeah, on Instagram, the handle is at RealBHicks.
Cool.
That would be the best spot. Yeah, I've shared a good amount of my running journey on there, and so that would be the best spot.
Okay, sweet. Well, I'll put it in the show notes as well so people can find you. But like I said, thank you again for coming on. Great getting to know you a little bit.
Yeah, you as well. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the My First Marathon Podcast. For more stories, tips, and resources, head to myfirstmarathonpodcast.com. And if you want access to bonus episodes, exclusive resources, and extra support for your training, make sure you check out the community at myfirstmarathonpodcast.com/exclusives. You can also follow along with us on socials, Instagram and TikTok. That's at myfirstmarathonpod. If you want to follow along with my personal journey, that's at tay.says. Whether you're training, recovering, or just thinking about signing up, you belong here. I'm so excited that you're here, and we'll see you on the next one.